Welcome to the Kinky Cast. Each week your hosts Woody and the Beast will take you down the kinky road of BDSM and the kinky lifestyle. Your questions and comments will be included in future episodes. Email us, questions@kinkycast.com, or call and leave your question on our voicemail. The number is 916-KINKY69. Here's your hosts, Woody and the Beast.
Hi, Woody.
Hey, Beast, what's happening?
Not much. Just another day in paradise. Traffic was fun today on the commute.
Yes. That's why you look so fresh.
Yes. That and my little darlings were quite a challenge today.
You have your hands full.
I do indeed.
So you're out driving around. Is that a safe thing to do?
Safe is such a relative term.
Well, I know that safety and the lifestyle is a real important thing.
Yeah, well, it's like driving a car, though. You have to make decisions on what is your risk level you're willing to take. And you got to often live with that level.
I've heard it called risk-aware consensual kink.
Yes, that's a word that we came up with after the SSC, safe, sane, consensual term of, what, 25 years ago now?
So what's the change between safe, sane, and consensual?
There's a lot of argument and debate. The RAC, in my opinion, puts a more equal burden on both top and bottom for their roles and their responsibilities in the individual scene. The RAC also requires the individuals to research what's going to happen, what the consequences, and what the rewards of each type of play is. Whereas safe, sane, consensual is kind of a open-ended agreement to explore. RAC is you make a conscious decision to explore a specific topic.
Well, both parties really have a responsibility to each other to be aware of the environment and the risks that are presented.
Certainly. We see so many submissives want to give all that power and control and responsibility to the top, but really they are doing themselves a disservice and putting themselves in a horribly dangerous situation when they ignore all the rest of the environment and trust somebody else's opinion solely for their safety.
Safety covers a number of things. You know, when you're in a public play space environment, you're doing some kind of a scene, there is the safety of the bottom that's involved. There's the safety of the top to make sure the top isn't distracted and gets hit by something else that's behind them. And there's also the safety of the general public that's around them, other scenes that are going on in a public place.
Definitely when you're playing in a busy, crowded dungeon, there is a lot going on. I have seen three scenes take place in a 20 by 20 room. And that means that there has to be a lot of awareness of the surroundings as well as the bottom in front of you. Can be quite daunting, but that's what dungeon monitors, dungeon masters, depends on your lingo, really come in their strength for, is to provide a safety net there. A buffer between scenes, so to speak.
It's an overwatching eye to make sure that one scene doesn't flow into the next.
Oh, certainly. It's easy to be backing up to use a longer toy in your play and find yourself backing into somebody else. At the same time, they may be pulling a 6-inch dagger back, and you've got potential for all sorts of problems.
Well, I've had scenes where I've thrown a 5-foot whip, and when that single tail is flipping back, anybody behind me is going to get it. So I always have to clear the space behind me as well as in front.
And that is part of the risk-aware consensual kink. You have to be aware of the situation. I have seen players playing with a 3-foot sword, doing some heavy very dramatic knife play, and they'll tuck the blade under their arm.
Ooh, that sounds risky right there.
Yeah, well, if you're not aware of what's behind you, who's behind you, or who's passing behind you is not aware that there's a metal rod floating in space where you didn't expect one.
Mm-hmm.
So safety is definitely a topic for the others around your scene, but more importantly, we think of safety being that the bottom is in a situation where no lasting damage or injury is going to occur to them.
Certainly another aspect of safety would be the safe sex portion of things.
Again, yes, that is, well, we go back to risk-aware consensual kink.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a thread recently on one of our popular websites about herpes awareness and how it's got such a stigma, but is it deserved? And they were talking about the real risk there. But we have all sorts of bad bugs that have temporary and long-term effects floating around. And that's a conversation that we definitely need to have with each other.
I've played in public play spaces before where when you sign the waiver and enter the room, it says that you will use barriers for any type of mucous membrane contact. And that means even... And in this case, it also meant even fingers. So I found that a little restrictive and a little overbearing, especially when I was fluid bonded with the person I was playing with. But those are the rules when you're in a public environment sometimes.
And those rules also do serve a public health consideration. If you're using the barriers, you are decreasing the stray fluids that could be flowing around. You are also decreasing the potential of contamination to other surfaces. I was introducing a new young lady to the scene and to some suspension work her first time. I neglected to inform the rope top, to his delight after the fact, that our partner was a squirter. His eyes were huge as saucers. I'll admit that I should have told him this before he strung her up. He was a happy camper afterwards, but possibly was not as honest and communicative as I could have been.
And sometimes you just forget things like that.
Well, it was such a common occurrence with her mind play that I knew she squirted. We just dealt with it on a regular basis. And the new guy should have been informed.
Let's talk about barriers for a second. Some people have never even seen or heard of a dental dam used before.
I've only seen a handful of them myself. In middle America, they are very rare commodities. I find them on the coast much more commonly. But in middle America, we just don't find them. And your health department has them available if you want to go asking. And, of course, you can order them online from the condom store and various other venues. But the dental dam is a piece of latex you stretch over the vagina, and your tongue can then have a latex barrier between it and the sex organs. It can be stretched over the rectum to provide a barrier and expiration there. It can be stretched over any body part that you don't want to come in contact with somebody else's body fluids.
They also have some non-latex versions of it for people that have allergies in that area.
And that's something that we, when you're talking about the safe sex, that's a conversation you definitely must have.
Mm-hmm.
And my toy bag, I have changed out, and I carry some latex condoms because I prefer a latex variety, but I also carry non-latex condoms. So all my gloves are non-latex, so that if the conversation is omitted for whatever reason, then you still have, I still feel safe that there won't be a negative reaction. There's also the female condom, which is a little known device.
Let's see, I believe those are called trash can liners sometimes.
They look a lot like a trash can liner. I had a play partner, she was just coming in, back into play after 20 years away. And we decided that we was going to use a female condom because we felt that the type of play we was going to be doing, it would be more effective to be able to trash can line her in advance. And then whenever our play took us into a sexual arena, I could plunge in. I've actually found them to be quite effective for that type of play.
Well, for the spontaneity, they're actually a lot better.
Yes, they are. Your partner can put them in anywhere from a few minutes to longer times. You have to experiment with how long they're going to stay seated. But if you put them in advance, then you can literally start your scene, rip the clothes off, and plunge straight in and still be practicing safe sex, which is a wonderful way to progress through the scene. Safe sex does not have to interfere with your spontaneity of your scene. They are hard to come by, but again, the internet's a wonderful device. But Woody, that's not all that we need to be concerned about on safety. You need to really be talking to your partner about what is going on in the scene and realize that what may be commonplace for them may be extreme for you. For example, you may have a fear of knives. That discussion may not have come up in negotiations at all. All of a sudden, you've got a very dramatic scene occurring with a sharp object.
I have actually had that example. I was doing a wax scene, and I normally remove the wax with a knife. And the woman that I was working with had a real phobia to knives. And as soon as I slid it in under the knife, she petrified. And I wondered, you know, what happened. And the next thing I know, her boyfriend came up and said, oh, she doesn't do knives. Little late on that one.
But in your negotiations, you had to consider that this wasn't knife play. This was a wax play.
Right.
And the knife wasn't a topic of discussion. We have all sorts of things like that. I'm exploring temporary tattooing, inkless tattooing. There's a risk involved in that. It sounds nice on the surface, but there are risks involved. So, you know, I bring out the tattoo gun and everybody's excited and all that. But do they really know the risk that it could be a lasting mark or not?
Well, a lasting mark. Plus, you have to follow the same rules that a tattoo parlor does for cleanliness.
Exactly. Exactly. And that means cleaning the area and using sterile tools and all that, which I do. But again, it's communication about what could be happening. You just can't take anything for granted in those prior discussions. Even the simplest spanking scene can have so much variation on what happens. It could be a few feather touches, or it could be whip your belt off and leave bruises that are lasting 3 weeks later. It's all spanking.
There's one other aspect of safety that we all need to be aware of. And you may be having a wonderful scene with somebody, it's completely negotiated out, everything's working fine, and they check out on you. They go into subspace and leave you alone. And all of a sudden, you have 100% responsibility for their well-being.
And that's something that definitely needs to be discussed in advance. And the bottom must totally trust their top in these situations. And in a first-time play, that's often a difficult thing to do, is to totally trust your top when that's the first time that you've played with them. But subspace can come on suddenly and unexpectedly.
Well, there's a lot of new players that have never experienced it before, and all of a sudden they're there.
And it's such a desired state of being that the bottoms are told that they must strive to achieve. And that's not always the case. They will often miss the trip along the way when they're so worried about the destination. But the subspace can come on suddenly and unexpectedly. I've seen people drop in the subspace as soon as the toy bag opens.
Mm-hmm.
And tops can experience something very similar to subspace also, top space.
And followed by top drop, which is a real dangerous little thing.
Yes, it is. Top drop. And sub-drop, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
The sub-drop is one we hear about more often, but we don't take enough care of the tops, I don't think.
You know, we can have a wonderful scene. It can go on for a good long time. The bottom goes into a wonderful euphoria. We escort them off the play floor into a nice comfy place, cover them up with a blanket, give them some water. Everything's good. They check out for about 45 minutes sleeping, and you feel like somebody pulled the plug.
You do, and nobody's there to take care of you.
That's right. And it's good to have friends around at that time that recognize what's going on. I had somebody come up and just kind of lay me down next to the sub and tucked me in also, and the two of us just checked out for about a half an hour. And that's a good thing when you have a support system around you of people that know these signs that you're exhibiting.
Well, I had a birthday just not long ago, and we was having a party, and one of the tops overextended himself, and he had a severe case of drop afterwards, and the whole room was involved in caring for his needs. His toy, his submissive, was in a puddle on the floor, and she was totally unaware of the disaster that her top was experiencing at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And the room rushed and got him juice and comfort and took care of him. And that's one of the positives about playing in public, is that network of people that surround you that are looking out for your best interest, or there to provide for your best interest.
That's a very good thing to keep in mind, because imagine playing by yourself in a private space, either a home, a hotel, something like that, and you get to this point and both of you are down. There's nobody to take care of the situation. A lot of these drop situations are electrolyte imbalances in the body. I always say have a sport drink around to where you can get the minerals back in you that will get you back on track again. Certainly dehydration becomes a fact. If the top is swinging a flogger or a whip or something, they're expending a lot of calories, and they're sweating, and they're burning through a tremendous amount of water. And the next thing you know, they start to go through dehydration signs, and at that point, it's all over.
And in our culture, with the rise of diabetes, we have more awareness of sugar issues that arise in play. You can be coasting along just fine. You're in a euphoric state. You're not realizing that your body is crashing on you. And you could go into a diabetic situation rather quickly. And many people will carry some glucose tablets in their toy bag just for that quick stabilization.
A very prepared top will have all kinds of things, everything from candy bars to what have you. If you're going to public space where there's water bottles provided, you gather those in advance, not after the scene, because you don't want to walk away from your submissive when they're in a very vulnerable state. And if you have to, make sure you turn them over to somebody that can tend them while you're gone, getting supplies or what have you. Always do it first, but if you can't, make sure there's somebody to step in and take care of your toy.
Well, in most places, if you're playing in a community setting, you have friends there. You can plan this in advance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a special moment for top and bottom. And many times, friends like to share in that moment on the edges in a supportive role. But the juice box is, I think, the miracle of the modern play. It forms so many purposes at one time for either a crashing top or a crashing bottom.
Safety is a real important part of the scene. So let's go off and see what one of our callers has to say.
Hello. I've been in the BDSM lifestyle for a little while. Nothing really hot and heavy. How would you convince your dom that you want and need more playtime? Thank you.
Well, Woody, I think this call crosses several topics. One, we got honesty, communication, safety. Those are the big ones that come to mind. The wrong way to get more play is to be a brat, in my opinion. That is acting out to be punished, and that's just a never acceptable way, and it never is a positive for the relationship in the end.
The punishment for a brat is doing nothing.
Yes, but the brat is expecting the punishment to be in form of some stimulation, spanking or
right.
flogging or something.
And that's why I say nothing. That's the punishment.
Yeah. Yes, the most evil thing you do to a masochist is nothing.
Right.
But communication. I think that's what the caller really needs to be working on, is being able to communicate their needs, their wants with their top, and to be listening to their top's needs and wants also. There's probably a very good reason that the play is not occurring as often as she might wish. It could be that there's a heavy workload that she doesn't appreciate the magnitude of, or it could be that he just is not aware of the level of her need. What's your thoughts?
Well, it's everything from what the schedule. Everybody is working and keeping busy on all kinds of crazy hours. And it's just a matter of finding time to make things happen. And we'd all like to have more playtime. That's a difficult thing sometimes.
Certainly is. And I can appreciate scheduling more than most. I have three relationships that I consider romantic. I have a string of play partners all wishing time, and it sometimes can be quite draining just dealing with the request, let alone fulfilling the request.
Well, ever since you cloned yourself, it got better, though.
It got better, but the clones were just as greedy, and
so
now they have their own harems.
Life is so tough.
Yes, for some of us.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the phones.
Hi, this is my first time calling. I have questions for you. What's the difference between a master and a dominant? And how does one become a master? Can you actually become one? I don't get it. What's a leather master? Is that different? Help me understand the difference. Thank you.
First off, I think we need to discuss the continuum that we're involved with here. Most people in Jack Rinella's books, he discusses it more fully. There is the spectrum from the bottom to the top, and on each end of those, they put the slave and the master. And those are terms that come from our cultural influences, and the consideration for a master is varied, depends on who you ask, what the definition is going to be. Most people do have some common threads. The master has more control, often absolute control of the situation. And the master is one that is in a relationship that allows them that control. Now, there is an argument that you can be a master without a relationship at all. So it gets a lot to do with the definitions. In my opinion, the master is a person that has a high level of control in a given relationship. Again, his personal negotiations on what that level of control is for the two parties involved.
So it's the range of the spectrum, master being the most dominant, the most in control, and then a dominant would be a step back from that, and then a top would be a step back from that.
Yes, tops are usually related to a specific time frame or specific scene. You top for a particular amount of time. It could be for evening, could be for a scene. A dominant is often a master without slaves, without play partners. He has a dominant personality. She has a dominant personality. A master is, in my opinion, more relationship orientated.
I do not consider myself a master. I was at one time, but I didn't like it. And so I backed off a step, and I am a dominant to my two girls.
And your ongoing relationship is an ongoing relationship. So that's your time frame, is ongoing.
Right.
And there's amount of control that's involved between dominant and master, in your opinion, and you don't desire that extra control.
Control / responsibility.
With control comes responsibility. With power comes responsibility.
Right.
And control is power. Now, she also mentioned leather master, and that term kind of bewilders me. We have this leather lifestyle that traces itself back to the gay leather culture that come after World War II and is subject to much debate. The hetero community has not fully adopted the leather culture the way the original founders of the leather culture intended it to be in many people's view. So the leather master, if you have such a creature, must be one that's involved in the leather culture and also exhibits the characteristics of a master in the amount of control and power they wish to assume.
In many cases, the leather master came up through a leather house.
That's true, which is a vanishing phenomena, I believe, in today's society, the quick path society. The leather houses existed that one entered the house much as a fraternity, as a new member in a fraternity, and you worked your way up to become a upperclassman in the house. And your role could be top or bottom, master or slave. But you worked your way up.
You start as a doormat.
You start as a doormat. Which, again, very similar to the fraternity notion in the pledges. And they worked their way up, and it was common in the gay male culture. I haven't heard of a female variation on it. But it's a vanishing phenomena, I believe, today.
We do have a female dominant coming on to the show here in a couple of weeks who did come up through a men's leather house.
She's a confident woman.
And she is a remarkable woman. With three slaves, and she'll talk about that here in a few weeks.
I do look forward to hearing her experiences and perspectives. But the leather lifestyle is, for some, definitely something well worth researching and finding more out about. Rules of engagement. Many people are getting ready to have their first scene. There are certain considerations, and we'll call them the rules of engagement, that people need to be aware of, and let's briefly look those over.
Okay.
You are wanting your first scene. You don't have a partner. How do you find a partner? You look around among your local leather community, your kink community, your BDSM community, whatever name you want to give it.
And start at a munch.
And you get to know that person. You choose some candidates and you get to know them on a personal level. You share your kinks, you listen to their kinks. And the important thing is to keep it all real. We so often get caught up in the fantasies that we overlook critical points that we should be considering. So that's the first rule of engagement. Get to know your play partner. Second rule of engagement is the negotiations, finding out, make sure you're on the same page. Do they want safe sex? Do you want safe sex? Do they want to leave marks on your body? Do you want marks on your body? These are critical things to talk about, as well as your hot buttons. What are the things they're going to send you screaming in delight, and what are things they're going to send you screaming into the night?
Sometimes there's a real fine line between those two.
Sometimes they are, and sometimes that line's best not explored when you're first starting out.
I know in my first scenes, I start way back of that line.
It's always safer to start way back and come forward. We all have had situations go sideways when we started, when we ramped up too quickly. And most of the time these end well, but there's always potential that it doesn't.
Somebody always said, never renegotiate a scene during a scene.
That violates the several principles. One is, you are often in an intoxicated state when you are in a scene space. You're often in a toxic frame of mind when you are even approaching that scene state. When your date picks you up at the door, the scene has begun. He, she may not have laid a hand upon you yet in any time of what we would call play, but the scene has begun because the mental aspect has begun. Your ability to make decisions already becoming impaired at that point. So, yes, never renegotiate.
When you lay out a scene, do you do it verbally or do you have a checklist? Some people use a form. I know in SM 101 there is a form that people can use.
I highly recommend the form for beginners. And I highly recommend the form to be used by experienced players with beginners. It forces a dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
It covers topics and forces you to consider those topics that were, as we talked about the knife earlier, not being discussed because it's not knife play, it's wax play. If you have the checklist, you are now talking about knives, and hopefully the fear of knives would come up so you have the awareness that you won't pull it out during the wax scene, unknowingly.
On our website, we will have a tools tab that will have a scene negotiation checklist. And so feel free to download it and use it in good health. There'll also be some other tools on there that deal with personal sexuality, and we'll get into that in a future podcast.
And a couple more on rules engagement. All right, you have your partner picked. I usually explore both a dispassionate checklist approach, and then I cast a few mental scenes with my potential partner. This is great titillation. This sets the mood, in my opinion, and it sees how they're going to react in different situations. This is usually leads to a better play situation because I get some feedback on what works for them and what doesn't.
And it's also formulating the chemistry at that point.
Yes, and chemistry is important. There are people that can play with anybody, but most people have certain things that are more positive reactions to. The next thing in this is the actual scene, which I believe should be negotiated out. That it's going to involve rope or no rope, bondage or no bondage. What type of play is it? Impact, or is it something more edgy? And that should be probably reserved only for people with some experience. And then you have what is going to be the aftercare. This is, you need to have that on the front end. Do you need cuddles, or are you going to be one that wants to be alone in a corner rocking back and forth afterwards? First time out, you may not know, but you can make an educated guess, knowing your own needs. And then you also need to cover, is sex included or is sex not included in this first encounter?
And then don't change it.
Again, you don't renegotiate during the scene. You may play with the notion of going further, but your bottom... And you need to be clear, no, this is not going to go further, even if we're playing with the notion. This isn't going to go further.
Mm-hmm.
There needs to be trust there.
Because you're both high on endorphins and not good at making decisions at that point.
And there's a lot of morning after regrets. And then the final thing is the morning after, there needs to be communication.
Oftentimes that next day is when sub drop takes place. And people feel real crappy, and they don't know why, and they think it's regret, but maybe it isn't. And communication between the top and the bottom that next day is absolutely critical.
And this is real communication, not just check in and say how. This is listening to both parties and trying to be empathetic and sympathetic.
Well, you mean I can't just text them and say, how you doing?
That may be an appropriate way to open a conversation, but that should not be the only conversation that occurs.
It's the subtext you have to listen to that comes in a person's voice, in their breathing patterns, how they can answer questions, to see what their real well-being is.
And this needs to be something that happens the next day. But also, we should only be playing with people we have some level of comfort with, because this follow-up should be doing every couple of days in the beginning. I've seen sub drop hit 3 days later.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen hit a week later and last for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
These are extreme cases, but it's possible. And it's from a top perspective, it's your reputation that's on the line.
Absolutely. Because a person that's feeling crappy about the scene or feeling just crappy in general is not apt to say good things about you if asked, hey, how'd your scene go last night? You know, you have to go in and take care of the condition that you inflicted.
Yes, you have to take care of the seen from start to finish, and the scene's not finished until the aftercare is done, whether it be 1 hour later or a week later or even a year later. Sometimes things will pop up a year later that you may have to be revisiting.
I had a scene that went on for quite some time, and in this case it was electrical play, and this poor lady had taken a lot of juice, and her muscles were twitching, and she was having a pretty good time. And I said, I think you've had enough. She says, no, keep going. I said, no, trust me, you've had enough. And she goes, why are you stopping? I said, because you can't stand up. And she says, I can too. And she jumped up and turned into a puddle right there in front of me. At which point she goes, well, maybe I can't stand up. Well, and so sometimes they don't realize what's going on. Their brain may be fully engaged, but their body has left control.
This is true. The bottom cannot be trusted with decisions, and the top must be comfortable in having made their decisions in advance and sticking with those decisions. And this is basically the rules of engagement. In short, I'm sure we'll come back and visit these again in greater detail, and has calls come in asking more specifics.
We just want to remind you to give us a call. Tell us what's on your mind. Any subject is a fair subject. We'll give you the best shot that we can at answering them. If we can't, we'll bring in somebody that can. And that is our commitment to you. We have both been in the lifestyle for a long time. We know lots of people, and we will make this thing happen to make your scene the best scene it can be.
Thank you, Woody, and I hope everybody has a happy playtime.
I hope you have a happy playtime too, Beast.
I shall.
You have been listening to episode 2 of the Kinky Cast. We want your questions and comments. Email them to us, questions@kinkycast.com, or you can call us 24 hours a day and leave your questions or comments. The phone number is 916-KINKY69. We all hope to see you next week. Oh, by the way, I'm Max. Bye.